like to go ahead and call the study session to order for Thursday, March 29th, 2007. And the first item is to review items on the agenda for the April 2nd, 2007 regular council meeting. Let's go through the packet. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. All right. Shouldn't have any action on page one, page two. Liquor license applications. Let me give you time to find those in the packet.
Thank you. Yeah.
We have a reappointment to the one of the recommendation from the Judicial Advisory Board, Noreen Richardson, for a four-year term. One of our magistrates at the court. Everyone find him? All right, this liquor license application is on page two. Contracts on page three.
Mayor, we will be removing item 5D from the agenda.
Okay. Under 5B, I believe this item went through the fire departments or the fire subcommittee when we used to have one. It has eight new fire inspectors, the trucks for those six inspectors, two supervisors. And these are new vehicles. Will these be recovered from the fees that are assessed? Is that part of that program? I believe this is just following council's direction that we already set.
Mayor Hucker, members of council, that is correct. This is for the new approved fire prevention program, and the fees are covered in the program.
All right, so the $166,000 for the vehicles was in it as addition to the labor, the different personnel?
Mayor Hucker, that is correct.
Okay, all right, thank you. All right, that's page five, page six. Is anyone concerned on 5F on the bids that had to do with the canopies out at the water treatment? They're $20,000 less on a $40,000 bid.
Mayor, I think, and I'll ask Jack, but I think you have a conflict on this item because I think it involves asphalt.
Is it 5E,
F. I have a conflict?
Yes.
Huh. Oh, is that why they're off?
No,
I'm sorry.
Where's my conflict?
So D, E, and F are off because of potential conflicts from, and G and H?
Yes, sir.
E, F, G, and H, I believe, Mayor.
Okay, Vice Mayor, you want to take care of those?
I do.
All right, I still have an ownership.
Okay, let's.
Yeah, let me just explain why. Evidently, all of these have some type of asphalt
exactly.
work involved.
Yes.
A canopy has asphalt work involved?
The groundwork for it, Mayor, yes.
Okay. Anyway, there's a clause that if you can benefit from any contracts that you have to declare potential conflict, and I have a remote interest in some property that I lease to a construction company that does this type of work. So that's my...
Very remote.
Yeah, it's getting very remote.
It's getting more and more remote every day.
You'll handle the next couple pages.
Okay, yeah. 5F.
Yes, Vice Mayor, we'll refer to... the engineering division, but typically when you have a what we call a bid spread like that, we talk to the low bidder and we review how they pulled their number together and their history. And we will get back to you, but I'm assuming that Peter's done that. And
well, Peter's sitting there. Let's ask him.
Oh, okay. I didn't see you. I'm sorry, Peter.
Morning, Vice Mayor. Yes, we have reviewed the bid, and we have worked with this contractor before. They're a reputable contractor, and we're comfortable recommending this bid for award.
And you're carrying insurance on this, as we do on?
Insurance and bonds.
So that,
yes, Vice Mayor.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure that when there's that much difference that they can actually perform and they don't fall through on us.
Yes, they have done several projects for us before and have done a good job.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions on 5E, 5F, 5G, or 5H? I actually had a question on 5H. Who's doing the leaky underground storage tanks? The acronym for that is LUST, which is a...
Yes, that's an interesting acronym.
Yeah, interesting acronym. OK, Can you kind of give us an update on where we are on that?
Well, we've completed the design, and we're at the point of awarding the contract to the CM at Risk, Conestoga Rovers and Associates. Once that contract's awarded, we'll begin actually construction of the system.
It just seems like we've been working on this for, I'm thinking, like 5 or 6 years, maybe longer.
There has been a lot of time put into this project. A lot of the time was doing site characterization. Also, then we had to go through the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality to get an approved corrective action plan. Once we got that approved corrective action plan, we were able to move forward with the actual design of the system. And that's been going on for just a little over a year now, with the actual design of the system. So now that the design is complete, we can move forward with construction and actually begin active remediation at the site.
Once this is done, will we then have remediated the whole site, or are there still, will there be remaining issues?
Well, we are doing remediation at the site for the BTEX components, which is the benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, xylene. And then there's also the MTBE issue, which is off-site, possibly off-site. We don't have any monitoring wells, actually, that are off-site yet. That's the 5 monitoring wells that we'll be putting in east of Mesa Drive. We will continue to monitor those wells. The treatment technology that we have chosen is called monitored natural attenuation, where it's naturally degrading over time. This treatment technology does not work unless you get rid of the source, though. So that's what the air sparge soil vapor extraction system will get rid of the source and allow the MTBE that's offsite to degrade at a faster rate. Because you get rid of that feed source, you don't have continued contamination as the groundwater is moving through and just moving it further out. You take away that feed source, and then your natural attenuation can actually work.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I appreciate that. Mr. Whalen.
Thank you. Several years ago, I was approached by Kathy Brown, who's the president and CEO of Brown Evans. Ms. Brown has a lot of extensive knowledge in the area of this problem. Mm-hmm. Would you just make sure that you contact with her? She's holds a national office in dealing with this. Christine, I think you may have talked to her.
I did. I talked to her several years ago, and we talked about her side and their experience. So we have experienced very similar types of situations.
But we're on board.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to make sure.
Yep.
Thank you.
Councilmember Griswold.
Not on this subject, so you go. Just if I can go back to Jack or to Peter. If we have, this is on a former one, so this isn't on this issue, I'm sorry.
Okay.
But if we get a bid from a company that we think is too low, we normally have to take the lowest bid. If this company is not, we don't think is reputable, what are our recourses? Do we have to take the bid if we don't think they can fulfill the contract?
The way we handle that, and we obviously, if we have real concerns, we check with the city attorney's office. But if the contractor is bonded and insured, then we have two options, and one is to accept the bid or to reject the bid.
And if I might add, Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, the charter requires that the council make the decision in the best interest of the city. So you are allowed to take into consideration your understanding of the ability of that contractor to perform the work that they're being requested to perform. And I think engineering, when they're reviewing the bids, they do look into that information, and they at least make a determination under the criteria they have outlined. Can this company perform the work they're being asked to perform? But council can also take that into consideration when it's making its decision. You can reject all bids if you choose to.
All right. I just remember before I was elected on McDowell Road near Greenfield, a company, we took it a low bid and went bankrupt in the middle of it, and the mess it caused the project for years, a road torn up. So I'm, getting the lowest bid all the time isn't always the best, but I just wondered what our recourse was if you have a low bid that you are somewhat suspicious of. So thank you.
Okay. Anything else on the ones that the mayor has a conflict on? Okay, got it.
Would take us over to page 6. That's the introduction, but how tall is the landmark monument sign going to be at Dana Park? Is this the balloon test thing, and it could be 100 feet again?
Mayor, this one's not going to be 100 feet. It is the freeway monument, so they can be taller, and we do a balloon test. In this particular case, they are making what we'd call an architectural embellishment on the north side of Dana Park, and it really fits into the overall architecture of the center. I don't have the exact height in front of me today, but we can get you that
information. Yeah, it wasn't in the backup information, so.
When you get the complete report, it will be there, but we can give you that.
Okay, and the
photos when we get the full packet, I would assume.
Yeah, right. Photos from both sides of the freeways, make sure it's visible.
And yes.
The first one that started all this down on
Sossaman,
is that ever going to be built?
No, Mayor, that was connected specifically through a development agreement to the development of an auto mall at that location. That auto mall is not going to happen, so that sign is not going to happen.
So the one that they used as a precedent isn't going to be constructed?
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Members of Council, if I may, I'm the planner for the freeway sign. The sign itself will have a height of 65 feet, and then there's a 20-foot architectural embellishment up to a maximum height of 85 feet.
I think we had one that was a 99, though, on the other one. Did we lower the maximum height, or is that just what this proposal is?
That's what this proposal is.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right. Let's see. That's page 6. All these are introductions. Page 7 continues. Over to page 8. Get some resolutions. Continued on page 9.
We're going to have a conflict, Mayor, on 7E.
You have a conflict on that?
7E.
All right. Okay. All right. Let's pull 7E from the consent, and Councilmember Whalen can clear his conflict at the meeting. Yeah.
Prehab and Mason.
Okay. Okay. All right.
A new leaf.
Right. And I'm looking at 7H. Let's see. This one, is this the, didn't, this one just rings bells. Didn't we have several million dollars to construct the parking lot? So is this the ongoing maintenance of it? And how do you, hopefully I don't have a conflict. How do you maintain a parking lot of that size for $20,000 a year?
This is the ongoing maintenance of just the striping and litter removal and graffiti removal. We had previously brought the contract to council for the construction of this project, this park and ride project.
So, all right, do you have a life cycle asphalt maintenance? Do you ever seal coat it or do anything else more extensive?
Yes, transportation will work that into their normal maintenance. This is just the ongoing, not the capital maintenance, but the ongoing minor maintenance.
All right. Okay, that's fine. That's page 9, page 10.
Rex.
Councilor Griswold.
On 7J, we're doing landscaping along the freeways, which is part of our maintenance, is our responsibility, at least the watering part of it. This is a pretty far draw from any of our water treatment plants. Are we using effluent on this? We use it on some of our freeways. Are we using our regular treated water?
This particular segment, Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, is just using potable water. Where reclaimed water is available, we do use that.
Okay, so this is going to be a more expensive landscaping maintenance probably per mile.
It will be the same as we have in other areas. We only have reclaimed water available in a few areas, but as we do have it available, we do use that. But it's comparable to the other segments of the freeway.
Thank you.
On 7I, this had to do with some tech stuff going in on Power Road, but it's $1.6 million for 4 miles, and they talk about fiber optic lines being put in for 4 miles. Does that tie into our fiber optic line that goes down to Gateway from Boeing? Or are we going to use this? Or is this a standalone 4 miles of fiber that goes, I mean, if it wasn't, you know, Mesa's share of this is $145,000, but the overall project is $1.6 million. So I'm trying to figure out how do you get $1.6 million worth of benefits out of putting message boards and cameras up for 4 miles.
Mayor, I'll have to check on the connectivity to find out how far it goes. The intention of this project for Mesa is to tie into our traffic signal system, so we'll be bringing several signals, intersections online into our system so that we can monitor the cameras, closed circuit TV cameras. And in addition, this link of fiber, we will be tying into that with a future project around Superstition Springs Mall that we have planned in the future.
Does this technology-wise speed traffic up or coordinate it so you don't need another lane? Or what's the trade-off? Just $1.6 million to run some cable and some cameras and just seems really expensive to me.
The trade-off is to actively monitor. We can remotely monitor the traffic cameras from our TMC here at the city and optimize the timing to make sure we balance the delays. So we'll have pan-tilt-zoom cameras that we can turn 360 degrees, essentially. We'll be able to monitor all approaches. I think there's one camera at Southern and Power, and there's another one at Main, and they can see about a mile in each direction. So it's monitoring.
All right. Is this when the freeway loop is completed, do you expect more intersection traffic or something in this location? Why was it picked over other areas, Country Club Drive and Southern or some of the other bottlenecks that we have?
Power Road is one of our most challenging corridors for traffic signal timing. It's due to the spacing and the congestion, particularly in the mall area. So this last 4 miles of fiber is going to provide fiber optics all the way from South City Limits to North City Limits. And it's part of a fiber network that we'll be tying into in future projects.
Okay. Maybe I need a better schematic of the whole system then and how this piece interties in and what your capital investment to date is.
Sure. We can provide more information on that.
Okay. I'd like to get a little better briefing on that one if I could. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. Historically, it's been much easier to get east-west in Mesa than north-south, and if there is an example of that, of how bad that can be, it's Power Road. A lot of us avoided it at all costs, go other directions because it's so bad. But when I was reading this, the first thought I had when I saw the vehicle detection system, I was thinking about the presentation that the police department gave to us, talking about identifying stolen vehicles, you know, the license plate reader system. And I wondered if this would tie in to that system. Was there conversation between you about that?
Mayor Hawker, Vice Mayor, this is actually not tied to that. It's a vehicle detection system to operate our signal system. So it'll detect vehicles to optimize the timing for traffic signals. That's what this is for.
Okay, so what you're talking about with the vehicle detection system is more of how many vehicles there are.
Correct, in noting the presence of a vehicle to determine how long a light should stay green, for example, and to provide progression throughout the corridor. So theoretically, when it's not, you know, stop and go traffic, theoretically you could progress throughout the entire corridor getting your green light.
So you get less frustrated. But when you go over to the camera system, which is the CCTV piece, is there any value in coordinating with the police department on that? Has there been any conversation there? I guess what I'm looking for is for you to talk to them. Maybe it doesn't work out, but maybe it does. And if we can, you know, if we can use things for more than one use, and it, particularly when most of this cost is getting picked up by somebody else.
Absolutely. That's actually part of the big plan, the bigger plan, is to provide those images so that they can tap in and watch any of those cameras as well. We'll have a whole network of cameras throughout the city, and they could monitor for their needs what's happening traffic-wise out there, I guess.
Okay. Well, their thing wasn't just traffic. It was those, they had some sort of a reading technology, license plate reader.
I think you can get these down that close.
Is that right? Okay. All right. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilor Griswold.
Yeah, one of our worst intersections is Southern and Power, particularly going south. There's no right-hand turn lane in the mall, and it backs up usually a quarter to half a mile every day, any time except midnight, and sometimes even then. And the only solution would be taking out the wall and a whole line of houses at Leisure World, which might be a more expensive solution than this. So we're stuck with a bad design made in the early 60s and 70s, and unless we want to take down a lot of houses, I think we're going to have to just work with the traffic light and make it as efficient as we can. So this may be the best solution.
Mayor, if I could, we're just on the cusp of finalizing our ITS master plan, and we were probably a month or so away from sitting with the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and giving them a full presentation on the whole system. And then if the council chose, we could bring that to full council, whatever your pleasure would be.
All right. Okay, thank you on this one. That's anything else on page 10?
Mike? Just curious, reference to Mr. Palmer, is he going to make his signatures?
Mayor, Councilman Whalen had a message yesterday that the rest of the signatures had come in, so I think we're good.
It's 8A, okay. All right, page 11. So we have the A-frame signs on for 8D presentation today.
You want to put that on consent?
No. Please leave that off consent. Thank you. All right. Okay, let's go back then to the study session item number 2, and that's to hear a presentation and discuss the Falcon Field sub-area plan. That corresponds to our agenda item 7G on our topic.
Mayor and council members, as Waheed's coming forward for this presentation, just a quick introduction. Waheed is our senior planner who's been responsible for this process. We were before you back in December, made a presentation at that time. Council had a few questions, some things they wanted to see modified in the plan. We've gone back and made those modifications, taken it back through the Planning and Zoning Board, and are back for you this morning. Waheed's going to give you a quick review again just of the total plans. It's been a couple of months, and for any public that may be watching, and then talk about the changes that we've made in response to the council questions. So, Waheed.
Good morning, Mayor and council members. This morning, I gave you a text revisions since we came to you guys in December 14th presentation. And I know you have seen this, so I won't go through all the details, just quickly go through the slides. Obviously, Falcon Field sub-area plan, we started in 2005 in your council directions, and we worked with the local business community because this is primarily an area that is in the north central part of Mesa, which is primarily industrial, aviation-oriented businesses, and of course our Falcon Field airport there. And recently Red Mountain Freeway basically passes through the whole sub-area. The plan talks about the history of the area, the planning process that we went through, the hierarchy of the plan, that it where it fits in terms of the whole global cities organization and the systems, and the plan itself, and what are the implementations. The planning process is the one I would draw your attention, is kind of like how much we got involved and where is the staff's involvement. The staff team basically act as a facilitator. We work with the planning advisory committee. Since this is a primarily an industrial area, this happens to be mostly representative from the businesses like Boeing down to aviation-related FBOs like Tango, like Heliponens and others. We had almost 13 meetings with these committees, staff and this committee, and we helped them craft the visions and the strategies and all other 9 yards of the plan. We obviously involved the community. We had 2 community meetings, as in the slide it says, in March and in June. And then also we involved the property owners. We sent to all the property owners by mail, contacted them, got their inputs. And we went to planning and zoning initially November 16th. And then after comments from the council, we went back to them again in February 15th. And then in council, as I said earlier, we came to the council first on December 14th, and then we are coming again today. Basically, the plan fits in between the city's broad policy of general plan and the city's specific implementation, which is zoning ordinance. So just to give an idea where this sub-area plan fits in. As I mentioned, that the planning advisory committee, or the PAC team we call, we helped them and they crafted the purpose of the plan as an aviation statement, strategies for actions, and the image building came out very strong that this area needs enhancement in that, and of course a direction in the land use plan for all future development in this area. In the vision statement, it came strong that we should consider this as an oasis in a desert, like aviation-related businesses, abundant high-tech jobs, and the regional entertainment. And of course, we want to recognize the aesthetic beauty, which is kind of like you don't find in industrial areas, but it is very unique here that we cannot ignore that this area has very high quality scenic vistas and natural desert landscape and all. Based on that, they crafted the strategies for actions, which three things came out very strong. Image building, of course, that this area needs enhancement of the image, so the sustainability of this area as a strong, unique economic center for Mesa and also for the region can sustain, and of course, the land use that supports that and the infrastructure, which is almost the backbone of the whole system. As I mentioned earlier, the zoning districts, just to give you an idea, this is primarily an industrial, already zoned area. We have vacant land, but they are mostly zoned industrial with very little retail and housing. Based on that, we created a proposed land use plan, which I want to draw two things since we came to the council in December. One is the area on the triangular green area, which is along Greenfield and McAllops and the canal, kind of the end of the runway. That area, with conversation with the neighboring property owners and businesses, ends up being, we want to keep it as open space as the current general plan 2025 identifies is as a general plan. The other one I want to draw is that the Sunshine Acres Children's Home, which currently in the general plan, for some reason, only the activity area where they have their buildings are identified as public, semi-public, but rest of the property is not. So they requested us to show their whole property as public, semi-public, which the committee and us thought it makes sense. So that's what we did that. Go ahead. Yes.
How does that work with 207? Do they need to sign a document? What happens? Because they're requesting a different designation than currently exists.
Maybe Debbie can answer the legal, but I want to say that we are not changing their zoning. We are not even changing their land use. This is just a recommendation. So if they come tomorrow and say we want to build something else, we will talk about it and say how this supports their plan or not.
So it's just on here, it's not on the general plan?
Right, it's okay. Not changing the land.
All right, thank you.
Most of the revisions I talked about since we came to you guys in December 14th, the major one was, if you remember, like some of you has concern about the shallow words and the shoots, so all the shallow words has been changed, which reflects in the strikeout version that I gave you this morning. And of course, the design direction document, as some of you said, we changed the name design direction to design inspiration, and it's not part of the plan. So when you approve the plan, you're not approving those images. I want to make it very clear. And then, of course, the two changes in the land use plan I just discussed. Based on all that, the implementation, of course, is the land use designation. As I just mentioned, the process is that we are not changing the general plan land use designations by adopting this plan. This is just the recommendations. And when an individual property owner comes in, proposal, we will evaluate based on this plan. But we are not changing their zoning also. And this gives us a directions, but some of, maybe John can answer more, like in the airport area, we started already that process we are working on to make sure that we take the initiative maybe to changing the land use and the general plan appropriately to reflect the plan. Streetscape, that came from the image building plan, and the individual development, that when an individual development comes in, we expect them to embrace the plan and support it and come up with the solution. Thank you. If you have any questions.
Questions? Rex.
Just recognize it's a unique area. It's a great place to live, work, play. You have all those attributes there of what it should look like. We've got major corporations moving that area and moving their headquarters now. The entrance to it is on Greenfield and the 202, where you have the old abandoned tally buildings that are covered with graffiti on state trust land and alleged drug and criminal activity there. Are we working ahead to remove that as the gateway to Falcon Field?
I'm not involved in any detail of that.
Okay. Something I would highly support, and I think our legislators could work with state trust land to get those buildings down. They're a negative when you bring brand new corporations here to invest in our airport, and the first thing you see, it looks like East Detroit. So, thank you. And it's on state trust. We're not allowed to touch it or even clean up the graffiti on it.
I'll be glad to co-author that letter.
Where's that at?
Right on Greenfield, the entryway and the old Tally headquarters. Yeah. Beautiful view from that. I mean, I've been in there before. It's a shame that it didn't develop into something. It's right next to our Quail Run Park. Okay. Any other questions on this? So we will see this come Monday night on agenda item 7G. Okay. Let's go on to item number three then, which is hear a presentation and discuss A-frame signs. And this is on our agenda for 8D Monday night. Not on consent. We anticipate a split vote on this one. All right.
Mayor, Council, this is basically just a reminder. This is an issue that the Council has been studying and wrestling with for a couple of years now. Last time we spoke, you directed staff to go back and start the ordinance process, and we did that. We went back to the Planning and Zoning Board and the Downtown Development Committee, and we got recommendations from those folks. The recommendation from the Downtown Development Committee was to deny this particular amendment. The recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Board was to go ahead and approve this. They felt that this might be reasonable given, and they were particularly interested in what we had the proposed trial period, which was part of this ordinance, which was a 9-month period. Kind of going over, just kind of a reminder real quick. The current portable sign regulations do not allow A-frames. What they do allow are open house directional signs, the weekend subdivision directional signs for the larger new home subdivisions that are being created. They allow some portable signs related to special events. It does require a special event license to be issued through the tax and licenses staff, as well as some portable signs in the downtown pedestrian overlay area. We had studied other Valley cities. Fountain Hills had this for a period of time. They no longer have one. Scottsdale recently passed portable sign regulations further restricting what they had, and they already had restrictive portable sign regulations. Gilbert still continues to have their portable sign regulations. This is a brief summary. One per store, generally smaller stores, 10,000 square feet or less. Relatively small, 3 feet high, 6 square feet. They are professionally made signs. The town does not require insurance. There is no permit. And the Chamber of Commerce helps to circulate information about the A-frame program. Pretty much this is what is at issue with regard to signs. We kind of wanted to lay out what those issues are. Anytime you're talking about sign regulation, you're talking about a balance between distractions and sign clutter versus aesthetic balance. Too much signs tend to be too much, tends to take away and detract from the community's aesthetics. At the same time, you're trying to make people aware that there are things there, provide balance so that they know where things are at. But at the same time, if you get too much of that, it then becomes a distraction and people get confused with those. Small stores complain about limited identification, particularly with regard to ground signs. The question comes up about sign clutter. If you allow a significant number of A-frame signs, there's a potential to add to that clutter. There's a question regarding the effect on comprehensive sign plans. It's a negotiating tool that staff uses. We work with individual large group commercial center builders to try to balance those sign frames. Sometimes the straight sign code doesn't work. So through a comprehensive sign plan, we go through a specific, almost sign ordinance specific to that center. And we try to sometimes end up with larger signs attached to the building or occasionally a larger sign adjacent to the street. But there's a balancing act that goes on. If the A-frame signs were to be added to that equation, then it might tip the balance one way or the other. In addition to that, when the City Council last made a change to the sizes of of detached signs in commercial areas. There was a reduction from, at one time, detached signs were allowed to be up as high as 30 feet in Mesa. They went down to 20, and then they went down to 12. When they did that, they passed regulations that said that if you have a non-conforming sign, in other words, in this case, larger than 12 feet, there were regulations that said that you had to bring that non-conforming sign into conformance with the current code if a construction permit or a sign permit was issued for that property. Part of the issue on this is that in the older centers, construction doesn't take place. Sometimes the sign permit doesn't require it. So the folks have just left up the non-conforming signs. And so the question here is that if A-frames are continued to allow to exist in circumstances like that, it may take pressure away from those property owners from bringing their non-conforming sign into compliance. The A-frame draft amendment that you have before you is partially based on the Gilbert Ordinance. We would use their height, their requirements for professional design, the requirement for one per business. We would use similar type of placement requirements, basically 3 feet from the sidewalk, 15 feet from a curb. If there was no sidewalk in place, it was on ground, it couldn't be elevated on screen walls or those types of things. There would be no illumination or permitting or moving parts. They would only be allowed during daylight hours or when the business was actually there. It would be brought back in the evening. And if they were in violation, the signs could be confiscated. In addition to what Gilbert is requiring, we're still asking for partial insurance. Mesa has a $2 million deductible for signs because these signs could be right of way. So there's a question about liability. Again, Mesa has a $2 million deductible. We would require a $1 million insurance policy with the city named as a co-insured. We would ask for a use permit with a fee. We'd put a date sticker on there so we would make sure that we keep track of when these were issued and when they would sunset. We're asking for a trial period on this, 9-month sunset clause. The ordinance would automatically expire in 9 months unless the council renewed that. They would only be allowed in circumstances where there would be no options to identify the business on an existing street sign or the possibility of putting a new street sign up to identify the business. And if there are comp sign plans that have been issued for that, we would deny the possibility of an A-frame in that circumstance also. Just some real quick slides to kind of go over this. In this circumstance, this particular business is identifying using two portable signs to identify their business. We would restrict that to one. There would be a professional design. The sign on the right would be what we consider professional design, as attractive as the sign on the left is. Unfortunately, we don't have a way to judge that, so we're trying to keep a quality standard to this. So rather than hand-painted signs, these would be one generally some kind of die-cut graphic. There would be a standard design. Typically, we try to avoid the one like we'll see on the right with the touch-free car wash. There would be basically some sort of standard graphics that would be involved. Setbacks, the example that you see on the left is a sign that would be too close to the street. That sign would have to be set back at least 15 feet. The example on the right is similar, with the exception you've got the banner that's hanging between the stop sign and the portable sign that's there. Again, an example showing the setbacks. These would be in compliance. The signs would be back toward the parking lot as opposed to up on the curb, as would be seen in this example here. There would be spacing between the signs, roughly 20 feet. Again, this is basically to make sure that the signs were visible. If the signs were spaced too close, then the question would be who would get the prime spot each morning when they were going out and putting their sign again. So we wanted to make sure that there would be at least some visibility for the signs. Again, and just wanted to talk about comp sign plans real quick. An example here would be the Mesa Fiesta project. This is a comp sign plan that was approved almost 10 years ago by the Board of Adjustment. In taking a look at the aerial photograph real quick, you can see from this that Alma School Road is the primary street. The street to the north is Grove, and the street to the south is Holmes. The center faces Grove, which is unusual for a large center. Normally, they would try to face them toward Alma School Road. That limited their frontage and their availability for detached signs. Through the comprehensive sign program, the Board of Adjustment adopted the ability for this particular center to have two detached signs, which you can see on the right. Normally, because of the way the sign allowances would work, they would only have been able to get one detached sign on Alma School Road. So in essence, they transferred their ability to have a sign on Grove to placing that sign on Alma School Road by going through the comprehensive sign program. That was a conscious decision that was made on the part of the developer when this project was constructed. If we were to allow A-frame signs in something like that, then in essence, that negotiating that goes on between staff and the applicant and with the Board of Adjustment, you kind of remove some of the pressure to do that. Other options that would be available outside of A-frame signs would include multiple tenant signs. The Mesa sign ordinance is flexible enough so that you're not limited to just one tall sign. You can have several smaller signs and take advantage of having multiple tenants or it doesn't have to say, for example, the name of the center. It can say the name of each of the tenants that are within it. You can see the example on the left has done that. They show several shorter signs instead of one tall sign. But the sign on the right shows one taller sign. The idea basically is that the sign on the right that you see has got, I believe, six or seven signs on it. With the signs on the left, however, they were able to get 8 or 10 just by going smaller, having several smaller signs that can identify more tenants. In addition to that, although nonconforming signs are required to come into conformance with the issuance of a sign permit or with the issuance of a construction permit, the sign ordinance does allow for the replacement of sign faces. The example that you see on the left, Main Street Plaza, that sign is just identifying the center, even though they have several small tenants. You can see that the applicants on the owners on the right with Perry Plaza, they have several small tenants as well, but they were able to replace some of the plastic faces without having to bring those signs into conformance with code. That's considered maintenance under the sign ordinance. And so as you can see, they've identified, rather than just Perry Plaza, they've split a sign that used to identify one tenant and now identifies the Filberto's Mexican Food as well as the House of Hearing Aids. They have a hair shop similar to those down farther down. They can show, again, multiple tenants just by replacing out the plastic face on a nonconforming sign. In addition to that, outside of town center, there are no limits to window signs. The Mesa sign ordinance, it was an agreement that was made with several of the fast food operators several years ago that instead of having portable signs out on the street advertising whatever the special of the week was for that particular fast food, that they would allow unlimited window signs. So in essence, you could cover the windows of your business with signage that relates to that. And that is also an option that's available to folks for identifying their business. Specific to the ordinance, there's a 9-month proposal. This ordinance would sunset after 9 months. That basically we would be studying the issue during that time frame. We're not asking to add any additional staff during that particular time. The co-compliance force inspectors would basically do this on a complaint basis, is how they would do enforcement. We'd monitor the number of use permits that would come in to kind of get a gauge for how popular this particular program would be. Currently, the co-compliance staff works approximately 2 hours per week on enforcing the bandit signs, which are the subdivision directional signs that come up on weekends, as well as the signs that tend to pop up adjacent to the freeways without permits. After the trial period, we're estimating, without studying it further, roughly that we would need two compliance officers and one permit tech to monitor and administer this particular code. We did want to talk about the downtown pedestrian area. Again, our understanding is part of the partial basis for adopting the portable signs in the downtown pedestrian area had to do with the trees that were there. They were blocking the visibility of the attached signs that were to that. They do also require a use permit. The location is worked out with staff. They also have a reinsurance requirement. There is an annual renewal. Participation initially was rather high, but it's now down to roughly 17 or 18 stores. And then again, just some real quick examples of the A-frames that you see downtown. And with that, if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer what I can.
In the in the downtown area, did that have any time frame on it? On the 17, you said it's down to 17. Seems like I've just driven through there and they've trimmed the trees and most of them are up high enough that you can actually read the signs on the buildings now. Is there any plan to eventually eliminate that because the trees have grown?
My understanding was that there was a discussion of that when the ordinance passed, that it may come back at that time. I know of no plans to propose that right now.
Because a lot of people throughout the city use that as an example of, well, you gave it to the downtown merchants, why wouldn't you give it to us too? So I was, okay. You can have an A-frame sign in a non-compliant existing sign so if you have a non-compliant existing one, a 30 or 40 footer, that business would qualify for an A-frame also under this?
Mayor, yes, they would if that tenant was not identified on the non-conforming sign.
Okay. But you would deny one if they went through the comprehensive sign package program?
If there was a comp sign plan that was there, yes, we would deny that because that's part of the negotiating that goes on. The developer of the property makes specific proposals that would allow for larger signs elsewhere in the center. The larger signs for the anchor tenants, larger signs that are adjacent to the street. Occasionally a comp sign plan will approve a transfer, for example, of a sign from one street front to another street front. If we start allowing A-frame signs to take part of that negotiation, what ends up happening is the Board of Adjustment would end up approving larger signs without getting smaller signs someplace else to keep the sign ordinance in balance for that site.
Yeah, I'm just, either you open it all up or you don't is the other way of looking at that.
Sure.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
I have some questions, Gordon. When I looked at the language here, you had talked about it being until, you know, from when they, in the morning until taking it in the evening. Mm-hmm. But when I looked at the actual language, I didn't see anything that put a time limit on other than saying displayed only during the hours the occupancy is open for business. So if they're open for business 24 hours a day, then they could have the sign out 24 hours a day?
That's true. But yeah, I'm not aware of too many small businesses that stay open 24 hours.
And this only applies in areas where you have let me give you an example. Suppose you have a gas station that is not part of a larger complex. Can they use the A-frame sign?
No, they would not because they're not part of a group, what we call a group COI
okay.
development.
And group COI development, the example that we had one lady would come in who owns a business which is currently residing in the Target Center at mm-hmm. Southern and Gilbert.
Yes.
Does that have a comprehensive sign plan?
It does have a comprehensive sign plan, but it's got non-conforming signs. I believe the non-conforming sign aspect of it would outweigh that comp sign plan. It's a pre-86 comp sign plan.
On Tuesday on Rigel 3, it would apply.
Yeah, one eye jacks on Tuesdays when you're playing poker. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I see somebody else who watched Star Trek. all right, and the whole issue of the liability issue, and the reason this comes to mind for me is I actually was at a gas station at midnight a couple of weeks ago, and they had an A-frame sign out, and when it came time for me to pull out of the gas station, it blocked my ability to see out onto the street, and I thought, well, that's a really great dangerous situation we have there. Obviously, it was a violation of current city code, and they put it in an area which made it dangerous. But if we were to pass this and there were no requirement for them to participate in the insurance, wouldn't we increase the liability of residents in Mesa who, you know, you could make the argument that they're in no way benefiting from this, that the benefit accrues to the business, not to the residents of Mesa?
Yes, you could make that argument.
Don't you love how I pose the question so you have no option but to answer the way I want you to answer? I'm working on going to law school one of these days, Debbie. Did I do okay on that? The other question, Gordon, is Scottsdale had a sign ordinance in place and then recently modified their sign ordinance. And I think it was on a split vote. Was their previous sign ordinance, did their previous sign ordinance allow this kind of uses and the new one doesn't, or what was the...
The restrictions they put in place were primarily, there are actually two ordinances that were involved. One ordinance had to do with signs that were within their right-of-way, which they prohibited, period. And then the second part of that was signs that are not in the right-of-way or on private property. And it had a lot of it had to do with political signs. And they gave restrictions in terms of the newer restrictions in terms of the height, size, and spacing for a political sign. In addition to that, they continue to forbid these types of portable signs for businesses.
But this ordinance would not allow political A-frame signs in any case, so it's...
We're not even touching the political sign.
Okay,
issue.
Thank you.
What is the, you mentioned a 20-foot spacing. Mm-hmm. Through a action, if there's four people in the center and they all want the corner and somebody's out there at 6 o'clock in the morning and they put their sign up, what's the penalty for somebody removing someone else's sign or rearranging the signs along the front street?
That's something they're going to have to work out with themselves, Mayor. So we don't have a penalty for who gets there first or who gets there second.
Who settles that type of dispute?
That it would probably have to be between the individual tenants, and we probably would work it out through some sort of dispute resolution process through neighborhood services.
But it, yeah,
I'm, right. I'm guessing. I'm.
And if one of the
I'll throw you under the bus. So.
If the inspectors go the code compliance, I guess to begin with, go by and there's not 20 foot, then do they take the power into their hands to rearrange the signs so there's 20 foot apart, or how do you? I'm just trying to figure practically how do you even try to enforce something like this? It's not like it's a fixed sign where you can measure it and it's done. How does that work?
At this point, Mayor, we hope that once the person gets a permit, that they're given instructions and they're educated. So our plan is that if we do have something like that, that we will probably work with the tenants and get them to meet with the standards of the law. And now, hopefully, they won't be issued a permit if there's already, three or four permits for that location and there's not enough room for that to occur. So we're hoping that that happens ahead of time so we don't have to face that issue. But if we do have to face it, we will try to work something up with the tenants to try to give them that spacing.
So it's also first come, first serve. Whoever in that center comes in and gets the permit, the rest of them are going to be denied signs.
Mayor, I don't think
is
they would
true?
I don't.
Well, how do you know? Because they may not have put their sign out that day, so there may have been that spot. Sometimes the devil's in the details, and I can just see a real mess here with some of the centers when they start competing for signage out there if it's not coordinated and one where they agree once.
Well, in talking with some of the Gilbert staff about this, they have actually gone to the point where they'll actually take a spray can and they'll spray an X on the curb or something like that to show what an eligible location would be for this particular site. I don't know if we'll get quite to that point, but they have done that.
So you get to spray X's on it.
We have some graffiti specialists
all right.
Out there.
Okay. Councilman Griswold.
Just sort of answer, we looked at Gilbert for a couple of years. One, is there any lawsuits? No. No one's tripped over and killed themselves, et cetera. Have they had fights or problems? Apparently not. People have worked it out among themselves. This is not huge shopping centers. These are small, little strip malls, older, pre-art sign codes, a lot of them. And you almost end up, do you want a small business in a little old, strip mall, or do you want an empty boarded up one with graffiti? I mean, that's where you come down. And if you, could you put the sign up the downtown pedestrian area, just what we allow now? Do you have that slide still on there?
Sure.
These are fairly good looking signs. They're portable, they come in and go out. I guarantee if you leave them out overnight, they'll be used as a paintball target and be at someone's home by probably, early hours, so that you don't misuse them. They're done professionally, and it also allows us to clean up the bandit signs. If you drive through our city, we've got A-frame signs all over, including in front of our fire departments. It allows a legitimate way to get an A-frame sign now and follow the rules. And those who don't follow the rules, the ones that do follow the rules, help subsidize the staff to clean up the, you know, do you want to work from home signs, et cetera, all over the place. So I think it's worth trying. In 9 months, we may say, no, I don't think this is a good idea. Take it back. And no harm, no foul permits expire. It's not a right we've given anybody. But on the other hand, we may say in 2 years we need to revise our sign code and you won't need this at all. You know, I'm looking at, you don't have the downtown one up there, but, you know, those are, we've done it successfully downtown for, what, 2 to 3 years now? And what was sort of amazing is that, you know, the planning and zoning said, yes, let's try this. And the people that voted it for themselves said, no, don't try it in any part of the city. I would just like to even the playing field and clean up the bandit signs and have something that we try to do better we have now. As I said, you went to the gas station and saw them. It's used all over the place and used wrong. We need to do it right. So that was sort of my speech for the day.
Let me just, the old adage is, he who defines the parameters of the argument usually wins the argument. And I don't define the parameters quite the same as whether you have small businesses or whether you have boarded up in graffiti. So I look at it slightly different. So I just think that one of the things is the aesthetics of driving down a street and not having 1,700 A-frame signs around the city of Mesa, which is what the staff, I believe, is estimated would be applied for. It's just, to me, that's a step backwards in what we were trying to do as far as eliminating sign clutter and having a pleasant atmosphere for people in our community. So we just defined the argument slightly different. Vice Mayor.
I guess if I really believed what Rex just said, maybe I'd go for it, because there are so many signs out there right now. If we hired extra staff and we went out and pulled out all those signs, but I think what's going to happen is that as soon as we start pulling those signs, that then that group is going to come in, and now we're going to have the new argument that everybody in the city should have A-frame signs and everybody should be able to have signs. This sign issue is just, it's a really troublesome issue, and it's troublesome because people who currently have a sign that they've put out when nobody else has recognize an increase in business. They say, hey, everybody's coming to my business. Well, now what happens when everybody's got a sign out there? Now, doesn't that diminish the value of what they did? And so, you know, my thought on this is to actually, I have been very much leaning towards being opposed to it. I might actually go for it if there were a commitment from everybody on the council that we would forget this 9 months not hiring new people, hire temps for 9 months, hire temps, go out there and enforce all of the bandit, illegal, whatever signs, only allow those, and let's see what happens. Because that would actually, to me, make a difference. And if the council would go for that, I think I could change my position on this, actually see what would happen if we were really only doing approved signs as opposed to the million bazillion bandit signs that are out there. So I might go for it if we went for that, Mayor.
I second.
Mike.
I'm of the same concern, and I do support trying this, but I'm of the same concern that by legalizing some, we will have a whole bunch more that are illegal and not have the enforcement tool to stop it. I don't know what it would cost, Chris, to bring some temps on to work with this, but I think seeing as how we got a political season coming up too, we're going to need more sign enforcement, especially with, you know, 80 people running for mayor, I think is what I've heard the last time out. My other issue, and it's probably not the time to talk about it, but it's a bigger concern than signs. And that's the proliferation of our abandoned businesses that are reopening with bizarre colors. And I don't know what we can do about that. I don't know where we're at on that, whether that's a right of business or not. But it's disturbing. You know, I'll give you an example in the downtown area of a reformed Taco Bell that is now really bothering the other businesses around it because they had to conform to previous standards. So I know it's not on this agenda, but if we could talk about that in the future, I'd be happy to.
Okay. Any other questions? I think we'll probably have some more discussions. This will be on the agenda for Monday night under 8D. So, all right. Thank you very much. Let's go ahead and move on to item number four is hear an update and discuss the status of the Parks and Recreation's 2025 Strategic Master Plan.
Good morning, Mayor and members of council. I'm Red Evans. I'm the Director of Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities. I have with me on my left Andrea Moore, who oversees our planning and development for the department. I'm sure she's excited to be here today to share a few thoughts with you as it relates to our strategic master plan in Parks and Recreation. The purpose of our being here today is to present that an update to this plan. And as a way of background, council and Mesa voters, by way of approving the city's 2025 general plan, approved the Parks and Recreation Master Plan in 2002. It includes park development goals to meet the needs of city residents as the population base continues to increase. It also includes our operational goals for the department for all of the areas of Parks and Recreation. This comprehensive plan was drafted by a consultant in 2000 and 2002 with the input from the public and staff as well. In 2005, a community attitude and interest survey was conducted to evaluate our park development and program priorities for Mesa residents. When residents were asked to rank the facilities for which they had the greatest need, the top four included small neighborhood parks at 65%, picnic shelters at 58%, walking and biking trails at 55%, followed by large community parks at 53%. Staff has provided for you an executive summary under attachment D in your packet that outlines a few more details as it relates to this community attitude and interest survey that was conducted previously. If you would now turn with me to attachment A in your packet, titled Summary of Goals and Accomplishments. I've asked Andrea if she would briefly review for you where we are at to date with our related goals and accomplishments and provide you with a status report of our park and facility developments, which are, as you well know, are lagging behind due to the reality of our fiscal constraints.
Mayor, Council, on Attachment A, I outlined just a brief summary of the goals that we have for facility development in the Master Plan. And you can see on there the first column, Master Plan Goals to Add to Existing Inventory by 2025. That's if we add together everything that's in the Master Plan, and it's very ambitious, but the point of it is to meet our goal of 6.6 acres per thousand by the time we reach 2025, based on the population projection by that time. So we broke that down into smaller pieces. We had a goal of by 2006 to acquire 390 acres. And of that 390 acres, we've been able to purchase about 140 acres. So we're not quite keeping up. Limited resources and funding ability, both on the capital side and on the operation and maintenance side, have affected that. But the goals not only include land acquisition, but also park development, recreation center construction, new pool construction, and additional sports fields in city parkland. So the only thing we've done to this point is acquire land, and it's about 38% of the goal that we had hoped to reach by the end of last year. If you look at attachment B, that lists our current park inventory. It's also on the Elmo, we can, and behind you, and I think you have a handout of that map too. And on that map includes the 8 parcels that we have been able to acquire to help meet the targets for land acquisition. They're mostly on the east side of the city. There's one parcel on the west side at Beverly Park near Alma School and University. But the other parcels on the east side, the varying size, neighborhood park, community park size, and metro parks. So that means they're targeted for all different types of facilities, ranging from playgrounds to sports fields. And those parcels are sitting there waiting for development once we're able to fund both the capital side and the operation and maintenance side. Those parcels are also listed on your attachment C. With that, I'd be happy to answer questions if you have some about the master plan or any of our goals for the future.
Maybe you have it here someplace, but you mentioned that the 8 parks that we're now comprising 237 acres would cost approximately $90 million to bring up to park standards, and then a additional $1.7 million a year to operate. What is the total to bring all of the parkland that we anticipate in the master plan at the 6.6 acres per thousand? If you use the $90 million per 237 acres, what's the cost to acquire, develop,
Mayor,
total master plan? It may be such a staggering number that
it is.
This master plan is not realistic.
When the master plan was written, the cost estimate for all of that development was $647 million.
Okay.
And so that was 5 years ago now.
It was a pretty big number even then.
Right.
Okay. All right, and that was over a 25-year period. None of that was ever modeled in our financial forecast as far as actually accomplishing it.
That's correct.
So this would be in an ideal, if we could keep up with somewhat what we've done originally when they set aside more parkland as we built out. That was, I think, what the balance was, if I'm not mistaken. So what's the conclusion? We don't have the money, so how do we get it done? You're here saying, hey, you guys aren't getting it done.
Show you where we're at.
Mayor, you asked for a briefing on the update, so.
Okay.
All we're suggesting is, here's the update. We're not suggesting anything more than that.
All right. As a suggestion, are there any park facilities, and I know this is only brought up because of the Riverview, looking at it, that are so critical in a development path that could we look at selling off some of the land that we have and then maybe buying in other areas that is not prime commercial land and actually getting back to park areas that may be more strategically located but not parcels that are the city could capitalize a lot of money from the sale. Is there any of that type of scenario that we're looking at, or once it's parkland, you basically it's locked in and you never sell it and never do anything with it? What's the philosophy with the Parks Department?
Mayor Hochter and members of the council, that is a valid suggestion and one that we are looking at. And I think as we move forward with some other developments within the city, as it relates to some of this commercial or park property that is in commercial areas, we are looking at moving some of those parks around to where we can hopefully receive some monies to develop those at some point or develop new parks in different areas at some point. We're also looking currently at some private public land or facility uses to where we can bring the private sector in to help with some of our, youth soccer and different things to where we do have some of this developed, or we have the land but have no resources to build a facility on it. And we are seeking private individuals or organizations to help us achieve some of these goals that we're unable to achieve.
Okay, all right, Rex.
One thing I'd like to include on these maps is sort of our trail system and linear parks, as I call them. And I wanted to commend Andrea. I understand she used all volunteer labor in the Mountain Bike Association and got the Haas Loop Trail all cleaned up and fixed up, which connects to 16 miles of National Forest Trail. So great job using very limited resources and stretching them a long way. So. And that's a good volunteer partnership. We've done that with the Boy Scouts. We've done it with different organizations. So. Thank you.
Even though I know you've switched that over to transportation because of some of the grant monies, I think the trail system should still be depicted somehow on the parks mapping. Yeah, I concur. Mike?
Reference to our Hohokam Park cost analysis that we're working on for the future. Are we still looking at naming right opportunities there, Rhett?
Yes. We, Councilmember Whalen, we now have a sponsorship, well, a staff person that's dedicated to selling sponsorships, and they are currently working on the naming rights of that facility as well as some of our other commercial operations.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thanks for the update. Number five is here, presentation, discuss, and provide direction on issues relating to the timing and amount of streets, fire, and police capital funding.
No. Good morning, Mayor, Council. Chuck is passing along this morning's presentation. Wanted to take this opportunity to kind of build on the presentation we've started actually in February, and I think the last time we were here was the 8th of March, discussing with you this the options for funding streets, fire, and public safety issues potentially through either a November of 07 or a November of 08 election. You've seen these schedules before, and we can talk through them a little bit further. Wanted to give you the current update. This is information, again, provided in this format previously, but we have updated now our fund balances and our revenues for both highway user revenue funds and local street sales tax monies for the upcoming 5 years. And what we have found in the lower right corner is we now have $29.8 million available for street capital, either RTP or CIP projects over the next 5 years. That number was previously, when you saw it, was about $36 million. So the adjustment to our fund balances and our revenues that we anticipate coming in the next 5 years have adjusted that down by about $6 million or so. What that has done then, it has moved up our total difference in available funding up to about $201 million. That's a change of about $6 million over the $195 million that we are identifying needing for streets capital in the next 5 years, again, for both our CIP and our RTP projects. This is the expenditure plan that would go with that. Again, you've seen a similar format before. The number previously, when you combined public safety police and public safety fire along with transportation, was $273.5 million. It's gone up to about $282.2 million. You will note that there is a box in the 2012 timeframe, and I've just labeled it under review, and that's those additional public safety police and fire projects that both Chief Beck and Chief Gascon had talked to you about that need to be discussed further. I did plug in, though, as we talk about this, there were no monies plugged in previously in the 2012 timeframe for either public safety activity, but I had moved forward and put in some money just for capital replacement of their rolling stock, because we know at that point we're going to at least at a minimum need to replace some of our fire trucks, tankers, ladder trucks, and things of that nature. So that's what the adjustment is. Here's the potential homeowner costs, again, sales tax rates and things like that. When we talk about all three questions being approved, that would be streets, public safety fire, public safety police, over the horizon out to the year ending 2014, and the impact potentially on a home that is currently $248,000 in assessed value. Again, just for comparison purposes. I know I'm moving through these quick, Mayor, so. Just if you have any questions. Here's really what we wanted to bring to you today. The question had come up is, maybe I should preface that, is to say previous slides were based on a November of 07 election scenario. Here is our projection based on a November of 08 election scenario. What that requires us to do is to go into next fiscal year starting July 1 of 07 and move forward and budget that one and do those activities individually, and then the starting in 08, 09, we would have the election in November of 08, so we would budget for having bond revenues available in 08, 09, and beyond. So what I'm shown here is really kind of splitting this into the 07, 08 category, and again, dealing with just streets, and Jeff's here to help me on this discussion this morning, is that we have $23 million in available for capital projects next year, just in the 1 year next year. When we look at our balance available after our HERF revenue and our local sales tax and what's available, then we really look on a 5 year planning horizon starting in 09 through 12-13, and what that says though to us is we only have $3.5 million in available capital in that 5 year period, provided we get no additional revenues or resources available to work with. Bond revenues, bond resources. What Jeff and his staff have done, and he can speak to this slide, is, all right, with that scenario, a November 08 election scenario, what type of projects would the city be doing in terms of streets in 07, 08, in next budget year starting July 1? And Jeff, you can speak to.
Sure. Thank you, Brian.
What we did is we put together a list of what our priorities and projects would be for fiscal year 07-08, assuming a November 08 election. And really, it's pretty limited. This pretty much allows us to do design of, I think, about 10 or 11 of the regional transportation plan arterial street projects. So it allows us to keep these projects going a little bit in terms of design. And it also allows us to continue several of our existing projects that we've also started. In terms of construction, this pretty much limits us to, in terms of our RTP projects that are funded in the regional transportation plan, really we're focused just on Power Road, two projects that we have on Power Road. And I'll go through this list real quick. You can see at the top of the list we have our City Share program. This is an ongoing program. We know we're going to have obligations every year for that, and so we've included about $3 million for that. We also know, based on our experience, that we're going to have costs in the range of $600,000 for installing and upgrading traffic signals as new development comes on in particular. Beyond that, we've got several agreements that we've already entered into with the town of Gilbert. We've got one at Pecos and Power for the intersection, as well as on Baseline Road. You can see we've got two projects there. We also have some funding in here to do some additional work to hold together Signal Butte. This is a location down in the southern part of the community between Guadalupe and Elliott Roads, where the road is falling apart. Actually, this road was really constructed for a haul road and also to provide access to a fire station at one point in time. Never really designed for traffic. It's now carrying a huge amount of traffic because of all the housing development that's occurring in that area. And with the additional traffic, the street's falling apart. So we've budgeted a little bit of money for that, $150,000. And then a couple of other small projects. We do have a couple of ITS projects. Again, these are projects that are joint projects with other communities. The larger project for a little over $2 million on Main Street is a joint project with several other communities, and it also is needed as a connection with the fiber that's being developed for the along with the light rail project. And again, this is a project that's already been started, and it's one that we're doing in conjunction with the City of Tempe. And the one above it, the Gilbert Road one, is obviously one that's in conjunction with the town of Gilbert that connects to their transportation management center that they're developing. And then below that, you can see a total of about $11 million for CIP projects. Below that, you can see the RTP projects that we have listed in here. The D that's listed there next to these projects is for design, and you can see that most of these projects, it's really just designed to keep the project moving a little bit. A little bit of right-of-way for the Gilbert and University intersection, because we've acquired all the right-of-way but that $900,000 worth. We want to go ahead and get that finished because we're nearly complete. And then you can see we have funding in here, particularly for Power Road, from Baseline to the East Mesa Floodway, and then from the East Mesa Floodway down to Galveston. That's really probably our largest project that's funded. And again, we do have some money in here for construction.
to get it down to Galveston. This is really an important project, and it's a joint project with the town of Gilbert and Maricopa County. We also have regional funds that are applied to this. So I think the total cost of the project's around $26 million. For our limited amount of funds that we have invested in this, it really makes sense for us to continue. But what that really does is it means that we have around $25 million that we're proposing to spend next fiscal year. After that, what we're really looking at is really just funding our city share program and also funding the installation and upgrade of our traffic signals. And pretty much that's all we're going to be able to do with what's available to us for the next 5 years. Really wouldn't do anything beyond what you see here on this list for next fiscal year beyond funding city share and traffic signals. That's all we'll do until there's additional funding available for our local match for these RTP projects. And again, as Brian mentioned, the amount of funding that's available for these projects has dropped because of some changes in estimates from $36 million down to a little over $29 million. So this further constrains how much money we've got available for this type of work.
Mayor, as we move forward in the preparation of our budget, and if we would anticipate a November of 08 election, this is basically what we'd see in the streets CIP and the streets RTP for the coming year. What that does is after we acquire that $22 million worth of projects, after we get our reimbursements, that leaves us with a net available for next year of only, after the end of the year, about $720,000. We will then carry into the following five-year planning horizon. When Jeff applies the projects that he anticipates in that next five-year horizon, that gives us a need of about $257 million over the next 5 years in streets, CIP, and RTP capital. What that looks like in an expenditure plan is outlined on slide 9. You can see that there's no supported bond capital expenditures in 07-08, which would be the July 1 date. We would anticipate with the 08 election, November of 08 election, it would be starting in 09 and going through 13. The number here is $341 million would then be, at this point, that would be our estimated bond amount at this point. Again, we still have the items in the fire and police areas that are under review. I did plug in money, again, for the acquisition of replacement equipment for the fire department. That number at $341 million is significantly higher than, and I got to turn back to my correct page here, on the previous plan where we were at $282 million. What really is the adjustment is the addition of the 2012-2013 year of about $74 million in CIP and RTP plan, as well as what we have anticipated doing is pushing the majority of our projects in streets as well as in public safety, police, and fire into the 08-09 timeframe. The pushing of those projects adds about $2 million is our estimate for inflated costs from moving them to the 08 to the 09 timeframe. So when you add that cost as well as adding the 12-13 timeframe, that's what adds to the additional total amount issued to the program. Here's the potential costs, Mayor, through 2014, again, for a home currently valued at currently assessed at $248,000. The annual impact would be in 2013-2014, $222 a year. Just wanted to bring this up to you. We've been working on these numbers. I know you'd had several other questions about the program, but as we're getting these and have some available to answer, we're coming back to you and just continuing to bring these as an update. Also, it's starting to become an issue as we develop our budget and what do we actually put in 07-08 and beyond into our capital improvement programs. With that, I'm more than happy to answer any questions you may have. Jeff is here also, as you know, and Chuck Odom can talk to any budget issues you may want to have. He's in the audience and available. Thank you, Mayor.
To do this election, the November dates are the only dates that this is allowed by state law.
That's correct.
We can't do it. Yes. Okay. And when do you call the election if it's in November of 08? What's the time frame for it?
Deadline, Mayor, is no later than July 9th.
Okay.
08.
July 9th of 07 or July 7th of 08.
Okay. All right. So then I guess we get, first of all, a little discussion on the 070. Well, first, I have to hear from all the council members, but I think there's a will in this council to go forward with this type of election, and knowing that if it passes, that there'll be the secondary property taxes outlined. I think the election date, whether the 07, 08, I'm not sure we've really, you're kind of working at both. Here's what right. happens at 07, here's what happens in 08, right. so we can see the parameters of the two different ones and the difficulty of moving it out a year, what that actually does as far as your budget cycle, and then if it doesn't pass, that's going to be a real interesting one on how you especially with regional transportation funds, if you don't do some of the planning, I don't know if you can even qualify for the funding if you don't have a proposal on what it's going to cost and what you're going to do with it. But we'd have to get into that whole discussion too. Or you'd have to totally scale them back, and I don't know if you could even accomplish the intersections in some areas with just regional monies.
And to that point, Mayor, as you said, if it was an 08 election and it was to fail, Jeff made the point that there's only after we, without restructuring totally our maintenance plan in streets, there's only $3.5 million of capital match available in the 09 to 13 timeframe.
Okay. The other complication on this is I don't think we've heard yet from the state legislature when the election date, whether they're going to because we have the home rule option that comes up too, so we have to figure out, because if we go to a November of 08 election, that means, and if they bring the date back when everyone is off council in June, you say you have to call the election by July. Does it have to be the existing council, or could the prior council call the election and it just have to be confirmed and ratified by the newly elected council? Anybody looked at that?
Mayor, the current council can call the election, and you can call it basically when you want. So you can call it before the new council members come in. Now, they may choose to come in and revisit that decision, but the council, sitting at the time that the council wants to make that decision, can call the election.
Okay, what's the disadvantage time-wise from going to a November of 07 election? Is there any?
The disadvantage financially, and I guess that's the only that's the only thing I can speak on.
Yeah, we'll take care of the other.
Well, again, we usually work under a five-year planning horizon. The 07-08 time frame through the 11-12 time frame, we do have the numbers worked up for that, and we feel fairly good on those plans, and we would include them in the budget. It does give us something reliable for the upcoming future. Our concern is going past 07 into an 08 time frame is that we lose a year. We lose a year not only to inflation, but we lose a year to fire station openings. If those were to be approved, we lose a year to police facilities being started and constructed. We really lose a year on the whole project, and that becomes of concern.
Okay. I have felt that this council was somewhat the ones that promoted fiscal responsibility, and we did the financing the future and looked at everything. I would say that I just as soon call for the election and have it in the November 07 time frame, unless I hear differently from that there's good reasons not to do that. And there may be, but that's kind of what I'm going at. We've identified it. We know we need the resources, and I think we need to take it back to the citizens. The primary property tax did not pass, so let's put this proposal together and look at the items that are going to be on it. I know there were some, Councilmember Rawls isn't here today, but some of the canals and some of the other things he didn't think were high enough priority. I think we need to scrub this thing down so that we basically are as a group in support of what we're proposing. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. The other one is it's going to get real complicated if it gets into the next mayor cycle with three council members and a mayor coming up for election, and a lot of us are termed out, so we won't have the continuity on the council either. So, Vice Mayor.
I need to look at Ms. Spinner first before I can comment on having an election commingled without commenting on the merits of an election, because I'm talking about the whole issue of I have not participated in the waveyard discussion at all because I have a conflict of interest on that. My daughter-in-law has a part ownership in a family business that owns the currently existing water venues in the valley. So this has the potential for being a competitor. And so I've refrained from discussion on that, but I don't want to weigh in on the pros and cons of that issue. I just want to talk for a second about commingling an election. Is that possible?
Well, Vice Mayor, since I don't know exactly what you're going to say, I can't answer specifically, but here's some guidelines I would provide. As you said, you should not comment on the merits of the waveyard that may be on the November 07 election. But what you can do is talk about the complexity of the ballot language and how complexity of the ballot may
impact. That's what I wanted to talk about.
So this election.
Okay, that's what I wanted to talk about. My concern is having that voter confusion and I don't know what you all are going to decide about putting it on or not putting it on, but I am concerned about voter confusion. I absolutely agree, Mayor, about scrubbing it down. I know Tom would faint with the shock of it, but I agreed with him that we need to remove canal paths from this. I think that everything on here, you know, everybody on this council needs to be able to defend. Everybody on the council should be able to defend it. And I think we ought to be in that place when we go forward on this. I think that everybody who's involved, if people are running for any office, that they ought to be able to explain how they would finance the city. If not this way, then what would they do? I'm concerned about giving people a pass on their explanations. You know, oh, well, I was opposed, but since the voters passed it, I guess I'll take the money. I mean, you know, that's troublesome to me. I think people who are looking at leadership positions in this city, whether for council members or whether for mayor, ought to be willing to explain how they would finance this city. Because, as you said, Mayor, this council has been the council that has worked hard. And thanks to your leadership, you know, we discovered the shortfalls. We discovered the problems. We're the ones who have made cut after cut after cut. I talk about how not fun it is. I think starting in 2001, all we've done is cut. And we have made very, very difficult decisions. And of course, it's not popular. People would like to assume that there's always enough money to do every good thing. That isn't the case. And frankly, I think had you not pushed so hard to get that modeling system in place that looked at where things were, we could have hit last year and found out last year how bad things were. And instead, we started cutting way back some time ago. So I think we should be the ones to make the decision, but I am concerned about having that ballot that's complex and confusing for people and not understanding how different things might impact the city's budget. So I think I said that. Did I say that all okay without? All right. Thank you.
Okay, Mike.
I couldn't have said it better than anybody. I'm concerned about the commingling of the issues. I believe that the current mood is to kill the incumbent because we are this council is being blamed a lot for the financial difficulties, not by all folks, but by many. I think that the secondary property tax needs to be an issue that future leadership of this council is going to have to take on. I think we would be giving them a pass by going with the November election. I'm concerned we don't have enough time to adequately talk about the pluses and minuses of a secondary property tax. I also think we need some time to really ferret out the issues. I think there's some public safety issues in there that I'm not fully in support of the first time around. I think that the home rule election, if, and I understand that there's two concurrent bills running, one in the House and one in the Senate, that will bring the election cycle back to the March-May situation, which would give us a November home rule election. I think it should be on at the same time as a secondary. Let this community decide where we're going to be. If this community doesn't vote for home rule and a secondary, then I'm really concerned about the future of this community. So I think it should be all done at one time. I would totally fear that we would get a no-no on a wave yard election and a secondary property tax election because of the, number one, people will say we're giving away tax dollars, and number two, then asking for a property tax to back that up. I think it's really confusing to the voters. And I give them credit for understanding it, but I think the no-no folks will take that to their advantage. So I would support a November of 08 election.
Okay, when is the home rule, what's the date of the home rule election?
Mayor, under current law, the home rule will not be eligible to be presented to the voters until November of 08. If they move the election back for mayor and council members, if they move it back to March of 08, the home rule election would be in March of 08. The Arizona Constitution.
March. The May was just a one-time fix to get you to November.
Oh, that's right.
Right. May is the one-time, the one-year fix. The home rule has to be presented at the same time that mayor and council members.
The entire are voters would not vote at that because it's not a.
That's to our point. That's been our argument.
I thought it had to be a May general election.
I thought it was a May general.
No, the way it is currently drafted, and the way it's currently drafted is the primary election for both mayor and council members will be in March. That will be the time that the home rule question or permanent adjustment, if that's the question the council puts to the voters. But that issue will be presented in March of 08.
Gotcha. Otherwise, it's November of 08.
Well, Mayor, Councilman, let's just clarify. Today, under the current situation, because of the legislation, we can't even wait till November. We couldn't wait till November of 08. We'd have to do something in, that's our whole point. We have to do something in May to get the one, because we have to be on the other side of the fiscal year, to give us the bridge, and then do it again in November.
Okay, so right now, let's assume that the bill passes the for the election change. We would do it then in March of 08. We would have a home rule election, and we would then have the council members and mayor running for the seat. Whoever gets elected then, home rule passes, let's assume, we get into the next cycle with the new council. They would then have 2 weeks or something to call an election for November of 08 to put the secondary property tax on the ballot.
Mayor, if I could.
Well, in fact, you have one other election. The wave yard election would be the November. So you'd have a March home rule, mayor, council, November wave yard, 07. 08, you go to the November. I'm trying to get this timeline on who comes in and
let
who's
me help,
got a call.
Mayor. All right. November of 07, the council may place wave yard on the ballot.
All right.
Then if the new bill passing through the legislature is adopted, there would be the mayor election and council member election along with home rule or permanent base adjustment in March of 08. If we needed a runoff election, that would be in May of 08. Then in November of 08, council can place the bond election on the ballot. That election can be called by either this current council or the new council that would come and be seated in June of 08.
So how far out could we call the November of 08 bond election? If we wanted to do that at the next council meeting, can we do that 2 years in advance so everyone knows that that's what's going to happen?
The best I would have to check the statutes. I don't recall specifically if there's a time requirement.
There is, Mayor. I think the time frame is not more than 150 days So it cuts it really close.
Not more than 150 days from?
From the election date.
So which council is going to have to call that? Does that work back so that the old council could call it?
Well, if the council, the new council would be seated in the first meeting of June, you as the outgoing council could call it. It'd be very close, but it'd be the first part of June.
Okay.
Mayor, let me also remind the council, that same council that's coming in will be approving the budget also that same month.
Yes.
And calling for an election. I think this city needs to realize that these capital projects are essential for the city. And without it, we aren't building fire stations. Every other community is building one or two stations a year. This is just a very, I would suggest to you this is even more difficult than the cuts were made last year, because these are long-term impacts that you can't just recover back in less than a year. It just doesn't happen. I say this not to be facetious or anything, but if this council believes that the only way that you can get this passed, and this council is one to lead it, do the November 07 and don't do Waveyard, if that's the concern. I mean, it's that important.
Okay, and how would Waveyard get on the ballot?
Mayor, the council would have to call the election and place the item on the ballot.
Can they gather signatures and put it on that way?
Well, we would not have, no, because Waveyard comes with a development agreement.
So
the development agreement has to be adopted by the council.
Right. Okay, other discussion? Vice Mayor.
Okay, without commenting on the merits of it, does a Waveyard election have to be on a November ballot?
No, it does not.
Oh.
That's the legal answer. The answer the answer from the developers is that they have to have, I'm just saying, this is a two-party issue.
Sure.
If we tell them we're not doing it in November, we're going to do it some other time, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be there.
I understand. I'm looking for legal answers, and that's fair for you to comment on those other pieces. The Constitution requires that a home rule election be held at the same time as a candidate election. So my misunderstanding was I thought that it also had to be at the same time as a candidate general election. You're referring to it as a runoff, but actually in our charter, I believe that the March election is referred to as a primary, and the May election is referred to as a general election. And that's the confusion that I had. I knew it had to happen at the same time as the candidates, but I thought it had to happen in the general election. So that is not correct?
Well, Vice Mayor, you are correct in terms of the language. However, our charter also states that if you receive more than 50%, there is no May election.
Right.
So because of that possibility, or to avoid that possibility, we have always placed the home rule question on the March election date to ensure that there is an election going forward for mayor and council at the time that the home rule issue is being presented.
Well, that clarifies my question. The other thing is, Barb, if you can never call an election more than 150 days in advance, then you're always behind the curve in terms of talking about it, aren't you? I mean, we talk about having more time up front and talking to people and doing all those things, but the maximum amount of time that we're given is 150 days.
With the bonds, yes, Vice Mayor, that's true. It's not that you can't speak about the bonds before you call the election, but that's...
For calling the election.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bonds
have an
unusual time frame for calling.
Yeah, otherwise it's set for... Obviously, we know where the mayor and council, unless the legislature is in session. Mike?
Not to be a smart person, but in response to Mr. Brady's plea, if it is that important to the city, this council has the authority to impose the secondary and move those bonds forward. Four votes in this council will impose a secondary tax, and we have that authority to do so. We don't have the political will to do so, but we do have the authority to do so if it's that vital to the future of this city. And even if it failed, this council could do that for previous bonds.
And how long is a recall petition?
Couldn't happen in time.
Yeah. All right, another scenario. Okay, what time frames are we under to make a decision for the election cycles and dates? What do you need to do budgeting? When do you need a decision by this council? And do we have, and I'm kind of getting at, do we have the time to wait to see if the bill currently in the legislature is going to be passed so we know if we're going to be sitting in these positions or not? And
Mayor, Council Scott Butler, Government Relations Coordinator, I thought I was getting away easy on this. As it stands right now, Mayor, the legislature is probably poised to sine die towards the end of May. But of course, that's always subject to change depending on budget negotiations. If that were to be the case, the bill that's currently moving forward that contains the election date change would become effective 90 days after the adjournment of the legislature. So we're probably talking about sometime in August before the general effective date of the current legislation.
Right, but we would know in May.
But you would...
what?
Excuse me, yes, Mayor. You would know more than likely by the end of May whether it has completed the process. It could certainly be sooner. We hope that's the case, but we hope by the end of May before adjournment.
Okay, if it does not pass, then this council stays seated until, I think it's January 20th of 2009, unless we do something earlier.
That's correct.
All right. Okay, other discussion on this? Is this a, how would the decision be made? We would then recommend an election date or cycle. Obviously, if you can't do it for 150 days prior, we're not going to make that decision today anyway to call for the election. I guess we can, I'd really like to have a sheet developed that kind of shows time frames, options, when elections have to be called. And I know we've had that done before on complicated issues, and I think this certainly fits in there. And then the other one is, I think we have a little bit of a grasp of the repercussions to the budget, but I guess I'd like to see what a budget looks like if none of this passes for someone in 2010 in our financial analysis, what other cuts or how drastic this really is, because we've kind of seen like this is what fixes it to keep it going, but barring this, you know, what do we have to do to maintain public safety?
Mayor, I think on that one, and we can provide you with that analysis, but what we've said really is that our current scenario, our current funding structure, for the most part, allows us to continue with current staffing levels. What the activities that we have identified here really do is provide those capital facilities and things that we need in the future. If we don't have additional fire stations, additional street repairs, things of that nature, what you're going to see is if we don't get them is to just continue to maintain what we have today and what we're staffed with today.
Okay, then our officers per thousand rate decreases, our response times decrease.
Our response times increase.
I would think we could actually calculate, if we know the population growth historically, what our officers per thousand rates would be, and some of the rest if we don't do stations and the rest. I'd just like to see both sides of the equation so we can do it. Mike?
One other issue also is that it wouldn't preclude us from bringing a public safety bond election forward in November if we chose to. And not bring streets, just bring public safety at this point. We could do that.
We could call any component of that, but we'd have to just see what that mix also does. But
I mean, it might be something that I could support right. At the same time. It would also save some election costs that we could share with.
Okay, that's an interesting scenario too. Okay. Any other comments or suggestions from council members? Kyle, you've been mighty quiet here this morning. I pull you into this.
Well, as I listen to the discussion in regards to what we're looking at and how critical this is, it's real easy to just walk on eggshells and try to avoid the fact that, one, we have to have the money in order to function appropriately. It's a given. And those who would be naysayers, shame on them. But it's going to be a challenge, But if I had to make a decision right now, I think I would just go ahead with the bond and wave yard together and let people lay the facts. And if they make a decision and it goes down, they're going to have to deal with it. So it's tough walking on eggshells, and timing's a huge deal. But we have to face the facts and lay it out as best we can.
If you go that scenario and it does go down in 07, is there enough time for the new mayor and council to bring it back and do it again in 08? There would be, right? Because mm-hmm. they'd have a two-week window.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd have to be really prepared because they're going through a budget and they'd have to call the election and do everything. All right.
Because also by that same scenario, if the new council coming in doesn't like, say we have called an election for 08 and they don't particularly want to, they could rescind it. They could back it off, couldn't they?
Yeah, or we could lose one and then recall and then they could back off too. All right, that's true.
There's right. so many steps along the way. Even an authorization doesn't sell the bonds, doesn't spend the monies on the project. So there's so many council actions, you know, along that spectrum that you could certainly stop the projects at any time.
Okay, and I think a lot of it is the council members that don't have term limits. Be interesting to see what their response would be and what their direction is, because they're going to be around for both. So, right. And one of them is not present today, and I'm not sure if Tom's going to run again or not, for sure.
Kyle.
And you'll be here, so you're going to have to deal with it, Kyle. So, all right. Jeff.
Just one comment. You know, if we just go with public safety in 07 and we don't do the streets bond election as well, just so people understand, after the coming fiscal year, we'll pretty much shut down our street capital program until we have a bond election. So we'll just be maintaining what we've got. There won't be any street capital improvements that'll take place, with the exception of Power Road. The concern we have with that is that going into this 20-year program, we knew that it was going to be difficult for us to get all these projects done in 20 years. The longer we wait and the more we defer the getting going on these projects, the more difficult it's going to be for us logistically to get 54 projects done in 20 years. This city's never done that, anywhere near that number of projects over that time frame, because that's in addition to everything else that we're going to be doing. So just so folks understand, logistically, we may not be able to get all those projects done unless we're willing to make some changes in terms of construction during the holidays, constructions near schools during when school's in, and that kind of stuff. That would be about the only way we could potentially get that back on track. But once you fall behind, it becomes very difficult to catch up with that many projects that have to be designed, right-of-way acquisition, and then construction. It's just a concern we've got.
And, you know, I go back to the who kind of got us in this mess with not having enough money to build the roads. And part of that, I guess, is I'm to blame, because there was a 30% local match that was required. And I'm looking at the 70% for the regional funding, and knowing that we've got Williams Gateway and a lot of arterial streets that needed to be built out for us to continue to have a good mobility in this region. And it's just tough coming up with that matching money. And now that we've cast our fate into doing street projects with a substantial amount of our regional share of that half-cent sales tax election, I would hate to not capitalize on that funding. The only thing I would question a little bit is how much can we really squeeze those back, but you still need the 30% match.
Right.
So that doesn't really solve it either. But I'm not sure that we didn't have any other freeways, and I don't think I wanted to expand the bus routes greatly, because that was a different type of sharing agreement. But because we really, I thought, had some needs. So I hope this plays out right.
Well, Mayor, the other way to look at it is that this is money, the regional money that's over $500 million, is money we didn't have. So that helps us with our street improvement needs over the next 20 years.
Yeah, we could have shuffled it some other place, possibly, but okay. Yeah. Vice Mayor.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time with your accepting any blame on this. I think you brought us dollars that we wouldn't have had.
for street projects that we needed to have, that we needed to do. So I understand what your thinking is, but, you know, that doesn't, I think that your thinking was correct originally. I think that what we need to do is figure out the way to come up with the match. The other piece of that is that the longer we delay, that 30% grows to 40 and 50 because the cost of the streets goes up. But as it is, we get to have the region helping to pay for it, as opposed to that money, we can't suggest that it would have come back to Mesa in some other form, Mayor. I think it might very well have gone to the West Valley or to some other community. What you did was you fought for us to get our fair share back, and I think you did a good job on it. So
time will tell.
I'll defend you. I'll defend you.
All right. Mike.
The sales tax street monies, that is all in street maintenance. Is that correct?
What it does is it funds our debt obligations and our O&M and leaves a little bit of money left over for capital improvements. But what we've said is that's about $29 million, almost $30 million over the next 5 years. And we present that list to you of what our priorities would be. And it's, you know, for $29 million over 5 years, for the magnitude of the projects we're talking about, just doesn't take us very far. It basically allows us to continue the design, continue to do the city share program, and install some street traffic signals, and that's about it.
I understand. And Jeff, I'm not, by suggesting that we just do a public safety, I'm not trying to dismiss the need for the road infrastructure. What I'm looking at is you know, we have a history of failure. I'm trying to win one. And by putting something together that would show a win and show a very, very small increase of a property tax, I think it makes it easier to come back the next year for specific projects. You know, we don't have a whole lot of time. If we decide to move this on in November, we don't even have a citizen group in place who's willing to go out and promote this. I mean, these things take time. And to change the philosophy of this community still doesn't believe we're in trouble. And that's what's so frustrating as an elected official. This community believes that there's been malfeasance on behalf of city government. I don't know what it takes to change that. And that has to be a cultural change, and it has to be a community that's willing to work together. You know, we've had communications from a former fire chief indicating he's willing to go out and pound the street and convince people that we're in dire straits. But until we can do that, I think we're doomed for another failure. And that's what concerns me by putting it on this plate.
Okay. How is the ballot worded? Would there be three questions on the ballot, or would it be lumped into one?
Typically, we would do it in three questions.
So you'd have public safety, police, fire, and streets. So right. There would be the ability to do that. Okay.
And Councilmember Whalen, I just point out, after the question slide in your packet, the next one has a breakdown for each of the scenarios, and it does show how the HERF money is spent, both for debt service and operations, and then the local sales tax money, what the revenues are and how it's spent for operations and things of that nature. The slide right after the question slide.
Okay. Councilmember Griswold.
You know, I agree with Councilmember Whalen 100%. I don't think we've done a good job communicating sometimes certain facts. 1947, our city, 7 square miles, 12,000 people, 7 square mile electric company, always paid a property tax. Big landowners ran the city, said, let's set our property tax at zero because we make enough money off our utility company and sales tax to run this whole city. 2007, 130 square miles, 460,000 people, we have a 7 square mile electric company. The model that they chose to run the city on doesn't work really well. In fact, it's such a popular model, not one other city uses it in the Valley that I can find, major one. Not one other in the United States uses it. So it can't be that great a model if nobody else is willing to risk their future on this kind of financial model that we chose to build this whole city on. So I agree with Councilmember Whalen. I don't know how to get those facts out, but somehow we're going to need to, or it's going to be a very interesting city to live in another 10 years.
Okay, I think we need to bring this one back, and the question needs to be whether we want to have an 07 election. And if so, what's going to be on the ballot? and have that actual, let's have a full council present so we can see where the votes are to move in that direction, because I do not want to miss a time frame inadvertently by not being able to, you know, just by delaying. So that would be my suggestion.
I think we need to make this decision within the next couple of weeks. I don't think any delay is in our best interest.
All right. Okay.
We can do that.
All right. Okay. Think about this one. Number six, acknowledge receipt of minutes.
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
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 All right. Any opposed? Passes. The reports on meetings and or conferences attended. All right. Scheduling of meetings and general information.
We'll see on Monday for the council meeting. There is a neighborhood, our community neighborhood services council committee at 3. So just a reminder of that.
All right. Are there any requests to speak?
I have none, Mayor.
Okay. Entertain a motion.
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. We're adjourned.